Let's get stuck into this.
Rich, so Rich at this point digs into reams and reams and reams of information that he's got here. So where do we start with something like this?
This is Referee's World with Darren Cullum and Richard Mellon.
Hello again and welcome to another episode of the Referee's World podcast, which offers training and education for referees of all levels. You can listen to our weekly podcast every Friday from 5 p.m. And now you can listen to our complete back catalogue by clicking on the listen section of the website, refereesworld.co.uk, or by going to your podcast provider. Don't forget to enter your email address into the subscribe box on the website and we'll notify you every time there's a new episode or some news you need to know about. And of course, we now have our Referees World podcast YouTube channel, which over the coming months, we're going to be doing some training video clips for you to hopefully learn from. My name's Darren Cullum. I'm a level 5 referee affiliated with Somerset FA. And this is PGMIL Observer and Southwest Pool Observer Coordinator, Richard Mellon. And we'll start today, Rich, with an email that we've had from a listener in Canada. So we are truly international, I think it's fair to say.
Yeah, we are. Who was it? Shane
Wally.
A couple of weeks back. Shane Wally in Vermont. Uh-huh. And here we are now. We're jetting around the world. I feel like a bit like Michael Palin.
You don't look like him, mate. Okay, so here's another email from the website, which, of course, if you've got any ideas, questions, tips, training, or whatever you want us to discuss on the podcast, that's what we're here for. It says, Dear Darren and Rich, my name is Jacob Barnes, and I'm contacting you on behalf of Edmonton District Soccer Referees Association in Edmonton in Canada. We're attempting to create a training program for brand new referees who've just completed their entry-level course, and we're looking for some ideas in terms of potential drills, other exercises that we could use to help entry-level referees improve their fundamental skills. I was wondering if there's any materials that you could provide that outline such drills or exercises. Regards, Jacob. Jacob, thanks very much for getting in touch. And hello, Canada.
Yeah, hello, Canada. Let's get stuck into this.
Rich, so Rich at this point digs into reams and reams and reams of information that he's got here. So where do we start with something like this?
Okay, so trying not to be an old schoolboy here, but, you know, modern Johnny, I've got...
modern Johnny.
Yeah, modern Johnny. I've got loads of external hard drives full of information about training topics and things like that. So using
and not
that,
dodgy videos.
Nothing dodgy. no, stop it.
He's blushing.
Stop it. But yeah, it's good to hear from Jacob, and we're certainly going to respond to his email with some material and some ideas about how they can help their new intake of referees, and we'll give them some resources to work on.
Okay, so we'll do this one by one. We're going to go through like this top 10 list. Okay, these are the topics that they would like some discussion on. So here we go. We'll do our best to cram this into the 20 minutes that we have in this podcast. Number one, signals and positioning. Rich.
Okay. What do you think are key essentials for young referees coming into the game, first half a dozen games? How do you encourage them to want to come back to that next game? So it's about selling decisions. We always talk about selling decisions. We've used that in the last episode of Referees World podcast. So selling decisions are a key skill that you need to develop from early on. Signals. How does this signal look? Do you stand in front of a mirror, Andy Garrett?
Yeah, that's it. I was just about to say, Andy Garrett, who was a guest of ours, who used to do that. He used to stand in front of the mirror and practice his signals, because that is a way, in the same way that a ballet dancer would do, to perfect their trade.
Yeah, I mean, let's just use a quick example to help people. I've watched a local referee last Saturday, and his directional signal for throw-ins was a little bit low. Can you see the signal for a throw-in there, Dan?
Yeah. So you're basically holding your arm out at a right angle.
But it's a right angle.
You're suggesting hold it up in the air.
Somewhere between 45 and 90. Okay. You know, that's a directional signal for a throw-in, because you can have the same signal which confused people at the game that he was given a goal kick, and he wasn't. The ball went out near the corner flag, but it was a throw-in. But because of his low trajectory signal, it looked as though he was given a goal kick, and people questioned it.
So just a point there, because if there was a decision, red ball, I would do exactly the same at 90 degrees.
Bring it up a little bit.
Okay.
But that's better.
So
even 5 degrees up from where you currently are looks totally different.
This is obviously clearly visual, so you have to imagine it.
Right, for Jacob and the lads in Canada, mm-hmm. what we're going to try and do is we're going to try having the mirror effect, mm-hmm. okay? Now, you're going to put your right arm out. I'm going to put my left arm out to mirror a throw-in.
Okay, yeah,
okay? So there we are. What sort of angle do you think we've got?
Okay, I would say my arm is at about 10 past.
Okay.
10 past or 10 to.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So there you go. So it's something simple that you can do. If you mirror effect, mm-hmm. you can do it the Andy Garrett way in front of a real mirror, or you can do it in front of a colleague. Mm-hmm. And like exactly what we've just done across the room, we've just done a directional signal.
So what you're saying here is for these guys that are training at home to practice in front of a mirror.
Yeah, why not?
Yeah, why not?
Why
Absolutely.
Not? You know?
Okay, so let's move on to the second point they've requested, communication.
Communication. We are not natural communicators as referees. Once we qualify as a referee, our skill sets start to develop significantly. And young referees, from experience, don't obviously communicate that well. They are
don't project well.
Yeah, I think that's a good description. Yeah. That's a good description.
Perhaps feel a little bit intimidated, particularly if they are quite young.
Yeah.
And the teams that they're refereeing are considerably older.
They're a little bit shy, a little bit timid. Yeah. Mm. Could be intimidated by people that want to shout. You know, if you're a 17-year-old refereeing 25 to 30-year-olds, in open age men's football, that is quite a challenge in itself. So it's all about confidence, all about body language, and how you engage. Communication is not just about what you say, but it's also how you portray selling decisions, your signals, your positioning, everything about you is giving out a message.
Your whistle as well.
Exactly, exactly. Good point. I mean, let me say the whistle has got to be used carefully. Don't overuse it, but make sure you use it and use it well when you need to. I saw a referee recently whereby a referee blows for half time. This is a little bit picky, but I still think if we all develop skill sets that are similar, then it will help people understand. Mm. At half time, he blew the whistle. He blew the whistle as though it was the end of the game and it'd been Battle Royale. We were only halfway through the game. So all I want to say is blow the whistle, peep, peep, twice. That's all you need to do.
And the same with a big decision like a penalty. You know, there is a way in which you blow the whistle to make sure that it's clear that that is communicated well as a penalty.
The penalties are the most difficult time in a game of football. Mm. To give a penalty or not to give a penalty when people think it is. That those are challenging times. So consequently, your position, all related, all these bits and pieces that Jacob has listed, they are all related to decision making, communication, and selling those decisions. So consequently, you know, how we pull all these together is really important in those early days, and even throughout your career as a referee, they continue to be important, and it will always be a challenge for you until you decide to hang and whistle up.
Let's move on to number three, positioning at restarts.
Yeah. We've discussed this recently, Dad, didn't we? When I said to you about being on the edge of the D, mm-hmm. you know, on the D, on the penalty area. That's not the best position to have for a penalty kick or even a free kick situation. Let me say to you, when there's a penalty kick coming, sorry, corner kick, I meant, when the corner kick comes in from the right-hand side, mm-hmm. is it being taken by a right-footed player or a left-footed player? One will be an in-swinger, one will be an out-swinger. And then when you change it to the other side, it will be an outswinger or an in-swinger, right-footed. Mm. You know, so think about your positioning. Somewhere around the D, either side, near the edge of the penalty area, is preferred. It's your get-out from the challenge of the ball in flight, going into the penalty area, being cleared by the defence, which is what happens majority of times. How many times out of 100? I would say as great as 95 times out of 100, the ball is cleared by defence. So consequently, what you don't want is to be in that D, which is the stampede area, because when that ball gets cleared, defenders stampede out through there and the attackers all run out through that D.
So what you're going to suggest is, as we did at one of our recent games, is the point where the arc of the D meets the goal area.
penalty area, edge of the
penalty area.
So, all I would say is somewhere around there, don't stand on the edge of the D or the arc. Don't stand on the edge of that, looking straight in at the goalkeeper. Mm. Because at restarts with like a corner kick from around there or free kicks that are directed at the goal, you want to be able to have sight of the goalkeeper. You want to have, if it's a free kick on the edge of the area, you want to have sight of the defensive wall. You don't want to be alongside the wall because you don't have an angle to judge where it hit the player in the wall, you know? Mm. So it's all important as regards how you set things up.
Okay, number four is foul recognition.
Foul recognition. Well, you've got a good technique and a good understanding when you see fouls. I want to say to you, if you see what's nearly a foul, we call those half fouls, mm-hmm. perhaps you should be cautious not to allow the game to go too much, because if he avoided foul contact and there's another challenge coming in, you might get an eventual foul that you could have been prevented if you'd given the first one. Mm-hmm. So foul detection is an important thing, and don't allow it to go just because you want to play advantage and you want to look a hero, because not always do you become a hero by playing advantage. It can blow up in your face if you're not careful about how you look after it.
Let's move on to number five, handball and offside.
The easiest thing
handball,
I can say...
Handball,
yeah,
there's one.
Yeah. The easiest thing I can say about handball is have a look at the IFAB law book this year. You can download it as an app as well if you want. But you see this T-shirt that I'm wearing here? Mm-hmm. Do you think that's a good gauge of handball if it hits there or not?
Yeah, I think Richard's just wearing a normal run-of-the-mill T-shirt where the sleeve cut off above the elbow, as it were.
Yeah, about two or three inches above the elbow.
Yeah, yeah.
And so consequently, I would suggest that if the ball hits up here,
no,
you're not going to be giving handball.
No.
But as soon as you get closer to the elbow and further down the arm towards the hand, mm-hmm. the wrist and that, that's obvious elbow.
But then you obviously get that decision that has to be made when a player has had their arms tight by their side,
mm-hmm.
okay, not waving them around or anything, and the ball hits them from a fairly close proximity, and they've got no option but to let the ball hit them.
I think when we get to doing some of our little videos, we're going to be able to demonstrate it a little bit more easily rather than just discuss it. But the position of the arm down along the side of a player, I would suggest you wouldn't be giving handball for it. We're not refereeing on the Premiership here. Mm. We're not refereeing elite football. We're talking about grassroots football. Let's remember that. Mm. So what do the players, what can they do? What do they do? And what do they expect? Mm. You know, there is an expectation about, let's put the arms out to stop the ball hitting me in the face, but it hits me here.
Yeah.
On the elbow. So the elbow is not in front of the face. I think that's handball.
Yeah, because your arms are up.
So. Yeah. Yeah, not expected to be in that position. So have a consideration as regards where the arms are positioned and what a player is doing. Because sliding tackles, let's call it the John Terry type of challenge. He was the most famous for it. Mm. He would slide, make himself as big a target as possible. And often the ball might hit one of his arms and he'd get away with no infringement. Mm. You know, it's just one of those things.
Okay, next one is dissent and mass confrontation.
Okay. Dissent comes in different formats. Mm. It can be visual and it can be verbal. Mm. The only thing I would say is a player who wants to have a chat, I don't mind him coming up to me and, you know, talking one-to-one. But if he wants to stand 10 yards, 15, 20 yards away from me and shout anything at me, then he's showing dissent. So consequently, it needs some form of control. During the next stoppage is when I would suggest it is done, as opposed to... If you stop during a game, you would be expected to take some action because your restart is going to be a free kick to the opposition.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So what I want to say is manage the game. And I see you do this on numerous occasions and you've got such a manner with you. Players listen to you because you engage with them. You address them in a polite, courteous manner. You don't point the finger at them. How do you feel when I point the finger at you?
I feel intimidated.
That's exactly the right word to use, because players don't like to be having the finger pointed at them. And Consequently, I don't think you should, as a referee, accept that. If a player points a finger at you, I think you should take some action against it. Now, the action can be a strong word. Use the captain and say, look, captain, I don't know what he normally does on a Saturday, but he's not going to do that to me today. And if he does it again, I will take some strong action. Do you understand what I'm telling your player? And I expect you to take control of him before I have to. And you generally get a cooperation there. We've got the sin bin that we can use, haven't we? Mm-hmm. You know, so there are areas there which we can use to look after dissent. Don't let dissent fester.
And if you do, it can affect your control of the game ultimately. And in a previous episode of the Referee's World podcast, this is the one we talked about recently where the goalkeeper was hurling abuse from about 60 yards.
Yeah.
And because I was a little bit ring rusty, it was something that I didn't deal with as I should have done.
Let me say...
That's on another episode which you can go back and listen to.
we're talking about dissent. And we, as referees, we all receive dissent. Dissent comes in a different format when it's a bit more visual. You've given a free kick. The player doesn't agree. He picks the ball up. He throws the ball down. How aggressively does he throw the ball to the floor? Is it quite soft? Does he throw it away? Does he kick it away? You know, think about all the timing of this, because there has to be a level of control imposed by you, the referee. And I'm not saying that every piece of dissent has to be cautioned. And if it goes beyond dissent and becomes foul language or abusive, insulting, then, you know, you are into the areas of a red card there. So consequently, dissent, if you nick dissent quite early, you can help stop further escalation.
Okay, next point is free kick management.
Free kick management. Alluded to this a little bit when we done corner kicks and that. There are different positions that you should adopt when you're taking control of free kicks. But the important thing for you as the referee is take control of the ball. Make sure the ball is placed in the right place. And I notice your style of doing it, Darren, is you place the ball and you walk backwards. Mm-hmm. Do you enjoy that style, or have you ever thought of another one?
No, it's just something I've always done. And the reason I've always done it is because I can just keep an eye on whether or not the attackers move the ball forward in any way. If I'm walking with my back to them, I've got my back to them, and they might just do something, kick the ball forward or whatever. If I'm walking backwards, I can also see what's going on in other areas of the field of play as well.
Okay. General awareness when the ball is placed by you, the referee, for a free kick is have a look how far close it is to the centre circle or the halfway line or the touch line, and get a gauge of where it is, where you've put it. You know, it's that peripheral awareness again. I'm back to that word again, peripheral awareness of where you've placed the ball. For me to pace out the wall, I would face the wall. I wouldn't walk into the wall. I'd walk up to the wall alongside it and say, yes, please, lads, work with me, lads. A couple of more yards, and then I'll be happy. Once you've got the wall back 9.15, then take up a position to observe if the ball hits a player in the wall. But standing alongside the wall, you've got no chance of detecting handball or not handball. But for sure, there is every opportunity for players to appeal. And so if you take a position behind the line of the ball and behind the player taking it, making sure that you're not going to infringe on their playing space, and look at the direction at goal. It will change a little bit if you take it from the right-hand side or the left-hand side, the player taking the free kick left-footed on the right-hand side, he's going at goal likely. If he's taking it with the right foot on the right-hand side, he's probably going to swing it over for the number 9 or the number 10, whatever it is, to go in there. And then vice versa when you go onto the left-hand side.
I would also like to pick up at this point as well, it's probably worth, depending on where this free kick is being taken in relation to how close to the goal it is, as to whether or not you allow a quick free kick or a wait for the whistle, please, and let me get in position, because you could end up in one of those situations that we had recently in that West Brom game that was talked about so much.
Yeah, and at the time when we briefly talked about that situation at West Brom, we talked about referees' basics. Mm. And here we are, we're talking referees' basics. Mm. These things are key to the referees' match control.
I tend to You know how we split the field up into thirds?
Mm-hmm.
When I get into the attacking third, I don't let anything go until the whistle's gone. It just, A, it slows the tempo of the game down. B, it lets me get into a position. C, it means that I'm going to have overall control on what's going on.
I agree with exactly what you've described. You say it slows the tempo down, but importantly, it also takes the temperature down.
Mm-hmm.
Tempo and temperature are two different things. Tempo is the momentum of the game and the players at the pace at which they're playing at. Temperature is all a bit feisty. Mm. And so consequently, to have control of both of those is important.
On to the next one. This is awareness and body language.
Awareness and body language. This is all about self-confidence and yourself. We talked about signals and how you portray selling of your decisions. So consequently, what I want to say, when you talk to somebody, a player on the field of play, at least give them the courtesy of looking them in the eyes. You know, if you're going to tell him off, you know, oh, look, I'm 5 foot nothing. If I stand in front of a 6 foot six centre half who's just, you know, taking his retribution on the number nine, you know, I've got, at least got to look him in the eye to convince him I'm determined to carry out the, you know, what I'm going to do. If I give admonishment to him, I've got to at least look him in the eye so he understands that I mean business. Your body language is important as well. You know, we talked about pointing. Don't point at players. If you want to indicate by pointing, you might be pointing to where the foul happened over there, the foul happened a little bit further around. That's when you might use your pointing indicator, but certainly not at players. So body language is a big, big thing.
Number nine, anticipation. That's a good one.
Anticipation. Reading play, not always easy at grassroots. Grassroots players are not as
skillful.
Not as skillful, not as accomplished as elite players. And the pattern of play may be direct at times. So you've got to be on your bike. But what you want to be conscious of doing is not getting in the way of players, not taking players' space. Players will become very irritated if you're in their way and you get hit by the ball accidentally, or you block the ball, etc., etc., or you collide with a player. And try to avoid doing a 360 pirouette near the edge of the penalty area. As the ball comes up to the area, you've just got ahead of play and the ball gets knocked into the middle. It gets knocked back out and all of a sudden you're doing a 360. Yeah. So you were facing the goal and now you've got your back to goal. And as the play restarts and it's the next phases go through, you're doing a rotation.
Yeah.
And so avoid that type of thing. Think about your positioning, your movement and everything else about it in a calculated way. It takes time. Your skill sets take time to develop.
And finally, your game management, which is something we have obviously just discussed earlier.
Yeah, game management includes all of these bits and pieces. And game management...
That would include game prep as well, wouldn't it? In the build-up to the game.
Of course. Know
about your teams.
Yeah, of course. Look out for a little bit of news about your teams, what their recent scores were, conceding or scoring a lot of goals. Have a look and see if there's any...
history.
Yeah. Admonishment, history between the two teams. You know, just because you've got the first team of the local side, doesn't mean to say that they might have four reserves in. Their players short, you know, and they're all coming back. They've not been well. They've got injuries or something like that. So don't underestimate the teams.
Excellent. Okay, well, there's that top 10 list of tips and tricks, which hopefully you guys in Edmonton in Canada have picked up. And found quite useful. Don't forget, you can post and share details about the podcast. You can get in touch with us as well through the website, refereesworld.co.uk.
The download is complete.
This is Referees World with Darren Cullum and Richard Mellon.